Welcome, everyone, to The Deep Dive, your gateway into the maze of the American justice system. I'm Lynn Pride Richardson, Chief Public Defender for Dallas County, and your host on this fascinating and revealing, yet illuminating journey. Join us as we peel back the layers, uncovering the realities and advocating for reform. Our team, composed of dedicated lawyers, investigators, social workers, and advocates, is committed to providing unwavering support to every client, focusing on holistic, client-centered representation. From unraveling systemic flaws to ensuring there is fairness and justice for all, we're here to expose, educate, and empower. Together, we dive deep into the heart of the matter, addressing the failures and striving for change. Welcome, everyone, to The Deep Dive, a Dallas County Public Defense podcast. I am your host, Lynn Pride Richardson, and I am the Chief Public Defender for Dallas County. We are so fortunate to have as our guest for today's episode of our Deep Dive, Carrie Stitt, President and CEO of Youth 180. Carrie is a licensed professional counselor. She has a bachelor's degree in psychology and a master's in professional counseling. Her experience in this area is not only amplified by her professional qualifications, but also by her active involvement in initiatives aimed at addressing youth homelessness, child sex trafficking, and adolescent substance misuse. One of Carrie's notable accomplishments includes spearheading the planning and development of Dallas's first youth homeless count survey. She facilitated a comprehensive survey that provided crucial insights into the challenges faced by homeless youth in the region. I could go on and on about Carrie's credentials and her accomplishments, but no one else can tell her story like she can. Welcome again, Carrie.
Thank you, Lynn. Thank you. I'm so excited to be here with you today.
Tell us a little bit about your background. Where did you grow up? Where did you go to school? And how did you end up doing this kind of work?
Yeah, so I'm actually an Oklahoma girl, born and raised. I graduated from the University of Oklahoma, and then once I finished with my bachelor's degree, I moved down here to Dallas to finish my master's degree. At that time, actually, whenever I was in school at OU, I was always like, I'm never going to work with kids. That's not, you know, what I want to do. I want to work with adults. And lo and behold, I tell people all the time that this field just reaches out and grabs you and pulls you in and never lets you go again. So I actually, when I moved down here, I was working at a mall, and I ran into this lady. I'm a chatty Cathy by nature, and I talked to everybody, and she happened to work at an organization called Dallas Challenge, and she said, I'd love for you to apply to work with us. We have a position that's open, and I was like, okay, great, you know, not knowing anything other than I did not want to work in retail.
I can understand that.
Yeah, nothing against retail. It just was not my jam. And I started working there in 2005 and loved it. I started my master's program, and then during the practicum stage of my master's program is when we had to identify a field placement. And I chose an organization called Promise House at the time.
I'm familiar with Promise House, yes.
Went over there and started out as an intern and still working over at Dallas Challenge. And then I thought, oh my gosh, I love working with the kids over here at Promise House. And they had a position open and I applied. And long story short, I ended up working there for 12 years. And I worked there as a case manager, and then I worked as a clinical services manager. And then by the time that I left, I was our chief partner relations officer.
Now, were you working with adults at that time or children?
So a little bit of both. So when you say adults, for me, it registers as 24 and over. Most people, it's 18 and over, but for the full adolescence for us in this field ends at the age of 24, 25. So Promise House's programs went all the way up to the age of 24. And So I worked there, and I oversaw one of the only emergency shelters for 18 to 21-year-olds in the city. And then we ended up losing the funding for that, and then I oversaw our human trafficking initiatives, our child sex trafficking drop-in center. I developed that and worked with the governor's office on those initiatives. And then I also oversaw all of our clinical services. So I oversaw about 20 to 25 counseling interns that saw all of the young people that were receiving services from Promise House. And then in 2019, exactly 6 months before the pandemic, I switched jobs and became a CEO. And I don't know what I was thinking, because nobody asked me about my pandemic management experiences. And I just kind of winged it. And here we are.
Absolutely. Well, you have to be good at it. Yeah. They ended up being the CEO. So that says something.
Yeah. So when I came back to Dallas Challenge, it had changed its name in 2017 to what is now known as Youth 180. And we are primarily known for our prevention program. Whenever I joined in 2019, we've always had a treatment program. It just never really was something that was really well known in the community.
Well, tell our listeners a little bit, what's the difference between a treatment program or working with kids or the individuals involved in prevention? Is there a different style or process?
Yeah, so prevention, think of it as the widest net that you can cast, and you're trying to catch as many fish as you can in the sea. That's really what prevention is. It's very broad scale. We're across four counties in North Texas, so Dallas, Hunt, Rockwall, and Kaufman counties. We provide our prevention services. We have about 18 prevention specialists who go into schools, rec centers, after school programs, Dallas Housing Authority, and provide various curriculums to educate not just the young people, but also their family members on positive decision making and self-esteem, things like that. And then treatment is more of a focus group. So right now in our prevention or in our treatment program, we just started a new cohort, and we have about 27 young people who are receiving intensive outpatient services from us. So we like to think of those as maybe the fish that swim around the net maybe and weren't actually captured in the prevention services. And then one of our most recent programs that we started about a year ago is our intervention program. So what happens is a lot of times young people are past the point of prevention services, but they don't fully meet the substance use disorder criteria to receive treatment. A lot of times those young people then don't receive any services until they've gone into a full-blown disorder. Well, we want to prevent people from, you know, needing treatment services. So we have an intervention program that when we screen individuals or we screen young people, if they score high enough, then they will refer them to treatment services. But if they're not quite fully ready for treatment services, but they are still maybe using, then they can access our intervention services, and hopefully we prevent them from then going towards needing treatment.
Now, you've given us a lot of information, and we have a lot of listeners who are probably not familiar with substance use disorders and what you mean when you say someone that maybe requires services that's using, mm-hmm. but is not, say, meets the qualifications to be considered addicted.
Yeah.
Am I being accurate in describing it in that way?
Yeah. So the assessments that we administer are going to try to look at a couple of things. what is your drug of choice? Obviously, if we are working with a young person who discloses that they're using opioids, that is something that is definitely more higher priority than maybe somebody that's just maybe smoking weed or marijuana and infrequently. You know, we have kids that, you know, maybe use marijuana once or twice a month. Those people, those individuals would probably fall in our intervention program. But if you're using opioids or fentanyl or pills of some sort, and you're using them every day, or you're using them 5 to 6 times a week, that is generally going to qualify you for a treatment services or a full-blown, what they would call, disorder.
So you're like a one-stop operation as you deal with all of those things. You mentioned earlier about casting a wide net. How do you go about doing that? What is the process for casting this net in certain communities, the communities where you're located?
Yeah, so we utilize a lot of data because we want to be strategic with our resources. You know, working in a nonprofit, resources are not unlimited. And so we really look at the schools and the communities, those that are maybe going to rate higher in poverty levels, or maybe single parent households, things like that we will look at. And then we will partner with the schools that are located in those communities and offer them our free prevention services and our curriculum. Our intervention program is also free. Our treatment program, though, requires, we are on all the Medicaid panels, and we also do a sliding scale fee. But we really look at a lot of data to try to identify the high need, high opportunity areas for us to really strategically utilize and maximize our resources. So, you know, if you have a school where all the kids receive free and reduced lunch, we may be in a school like that. Or if they're in an area where there may not be a rec center that's close by where kids can go and get after school care or something like that, we might be in a school like that, that are traditionally communities that maybe are resource deplete. So we work a lot in the South Irving area. That's a community that doesn't necessarily have a lot of resources for young people in their communities. So that we really try to prioritize those high need areas.
I love that you're partnering with schools because we hear so much about the opiate crisis, fentanyl. It's killing our kids. It's imperative that all of us, we in the criminal justice system, are trying to partner with organizations in the communities so that we can prevent people from coming into the criminal justice system. Mm-hmm. So that's critical. But another critical piece of this, which I love about your organization, is that you include the family, the parents. We have found, especially in the criminal justice system, that we can put people through some of the programming, the diversion court programs, specialty court programs that we have here, and they do fine, they do well, they're doing better. We release them back to the community. They're going to go back to their homes and to their families. And if things aren't operating the way they should be, then we end up seeing them again. It's sort of like a vicious, you know, cycle, the revolving door in and out of the system, because we haven't really connected with the people that are closest to them that have an impact on how successful they are.
Yeah, that's one of the key things for us is system involvement. And when I say system, I'm not necessarily speaking to juvenile justice system or any kind of external system other than maybe the family of origin or the family of, or the origin of support, really. Because how shameful is it to have a young person get dropped off for treatment, and they're the only ones coming and getting any kind of, you know, assistance. It's kind of telling that person without telling them with words, it's your problem and you go fix it and then come back to us. But really, we want to set people up to go back into an environment of empathy, and one that is more equipped to not only just handle this young person's needs, but their own individual needs. I can't tell you how many times we have parents that come in and they're like, oh, I don't need help. You know, it's just, you know, him that needs it or her that needs it. But then when we talk with them more about, okay, you're right, you probably don't need help, but can we at least get you to engage with some services with us? And then they'll be the ones that are there early, coming to all the sessions now, because they start to realize that, you know, maybe some of this is a generational thing. You know, parenting, I'm a parent myself, and I learned how to parent from my parents, and I learned how not to parent from my parents. So it's just something that, you know, we're so much more successful when the entire support system is engaged as opposed to just one person.
I love this. It's a holistic approach to that. Also, we were discussing substance use. Mental illness is, and mental health is an issue that all of us are facing coming out of the pandemic.
Yeah.
Tell us a little bit about your services as it pertains to mental health treatment.
Yeah, so all of our clinicians are dually licensed, meaning that they will have a licensed chemical dependency counselor license, and they're either a LPC, a licensed professional counselor, a licensed clinical social worker, a licensed mental or master social worker, so that they can address both issues. A lot of times it's with substance use and with mental health, it's which came first, you know, the mental health issues or the substance use. And so it's really important for us to be able to address both things and not just one, because we're dealing primarily with families that their resources are very stretched. And so one of the things that they maybe can't always do is go from one place to another to receive different services. So if we remove that barrier of having to go somewhere else to maybe get your mental health needs met, and we can incorporate it and integrate it into the substance use counseling, that makes it that much more easier for families to get the comprehensive services that they need, but also it increases our efficacy with our treatment services. Many of our young people are dealing with anxiety, depression, suicidal ideation. With Texas ranking number one in the country for a number of uninsured children, our kids are reporting to us that it's easier and cheaper to get pills off the street that we don't know what's in them than it is to go to your primary care physician or your psychiatrist to get a prescription, get it filled. Many of our young people and their families are living below the federal poverty level. So if I'm having to take off work to take you to the doctor, that could mean making a choice between taking my child to a primary care physician appointment or being able to pay the lights, putting food on the table, because I have the luxury of having paid time off. A lot of our families don't. They're hourly. And so we don't want them to have to make that decision. And what a terrible decision to have to choose between. You know, how heartbreaking. And so we want to try to remove as many barriers as we can so that families can get the help and the support that they need.
We love that. So if you have a parent out there that's listening and would like to explore or to find out more about the services that you provide, how would they go about doing that? Is there a location that they would have to come to fill out an application? Can they go online?
Yeah, so We traditionally try to tell people to call first, and this is the reason why. You're always welcome to come in to our facility. We do accept walk-ins, but like I've said, we know that resources can be stretched thin at times. So we ask people to call first over the phone. We'll do an assessment with you and ask some questions just to see if we are the correct place for you to be able to receive services at. If we're not, then we will connect you with somebody else. If you are, then we will get you connected with one of our counselors, our intake counselors, that will be able to coordinate the family coming in and starting services.
Are there any restrictions as to a particular age category?
No.
Anything like that? If they are justice involved, can they also participate and receive services and support?
Yes, especially if they're justice involved. We can see young people regardless of their insurance status. So if you're uninsured, we partner with North Texas Behavioral Health Authority that will provide payment for services for families. We're on all the Medicaid panels. We also do a sliding scale fee. So some of our families will pay as little as $2 for a service. We also, if you have commercial insurance, we are not on any commercial insurance panels, but we will honor a copay. So if you have Blue Cross Blue Shield and your copay would be $35, then you would come in and pay your $35 and you would be able to see one of our counselors and receive treatment services.
This is incredible. It's awesome. I've been working in the criminal justice area for a long, long time and working with those people who have mental health issues and substance use disorders. And to have something like this nonprofit, Youth 180, available in communities is just incredible, especially as it relates to our young people, because we find there are a lot of services in the area for adults, but not necessarily for young people. I mean, there's, you know, certain areas that you can go to, but there's certain restrictions. So this is absolutely wonderful. If someone comes there and is able to participate in the programming, can you tell our listeners about some of the other programs that are available for the parents, for example, that they can come to and receive assistance and support?
Yeah.
From you guys?
Yeah, so our parenting programs on our treatment side look very similar to what our young people go through. So our young people will have individual sessions. Well, let me start with this. Our treatment plans are all individualized. So we don't have, you know, a prescriptive plan, meaning everybody gets two sessions of individual and then you get one group session. Everybody's different. Every family needs something different. So we offer individual sessions for both the parents and the young people. We will offer family sessions. And then we also have what we call parent support groups because it's hard raising a teenager. I have a teenager myself, and I need a support group some days too.
Any parent would understand. A parent of teenagers certainly understands that.
Yes, yeah. And so there's so much power in group. And we have all of our services are offered in English and Spanish. In fact, probably right now of the 27 young people that we have, probably 97% of them are Spanish speaking, first language. So all of our services are offered in English and Spanish, both for the parents and the young people. It's important for us that, you know, we're able to provide culturally competent services, especially in this realm, because it's some of this is very nuanced, and with different cultures respond differently to different interventions. And so we want to make sure that when people come into our center that they feel like, okay, you understand me. Like if I see somebody that looks like me or if that just brings me a level of comfort and knowing that I can speak in my native language and get the help that I need in my native language just is incredibly empowering for our families.
So that whole cultural competency issue.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
Fascinating.
And I also want to say not only are our services in English and Spanish, but we will see individuals and families regardless of your citizenship status. We do not ask any citizenship questions at all. And so we want this truly to be a safe space for everybody, regardless of where you come from, what language you speak, how much you make, whatever part of Dallas you come from. Mental health and substance use happens everywhere. It is not a discriminatory disease or issue. It happens across the board.
That is absolutely wonderful. You know, I'm also intrigued with your work in terms of working with young people who've been trafficked. Mm-hmm. In fact, North Texas is probably one of the biggest areas for trafficking in the state of Texas. Tell us a little bit about your work with young people who have been involved in the sex trafficking trade.
Yeah, so I set up one of the first drop-in centers for victims of child sex trafficking. It was in the North Oak Cliff area. With Dallas being such a hub for child sex trafficking, it's imperative that the services that we have here are robust and responsive, because it happens everywhere. And it's not just a certain demographic that it happens to. I think people would really be surprised at who some of the victims are. You know, of course, there are going to be some factors that are going to make you a little bit more susceptible to being a victim of child sex trafficking. So if you've had history in CPS, if you're maybe a foster care kid and you go from, you know, home to home, that could be something that could make you more susceptible. I think a lot more needs to be maybe said around the coercion and the manipulation piece of sex trafficking. And not just child sex trafficking. It amazes me when people think, oh, you turn 18 and you automatically become an adult, and then they start to call you a prostitute. And it's like, well, wait a second. Let's talk about this here. He was just 17 yesterday, and we were okay with them doing that now, and now, you know, we're not. Like, there's a lot of manipulation and coercion that happens with the sex trafficking. And when I would work with young people, you could never just come out and say, are you being trafficked? Because 100% of the time they're going to say no, because they don't see themselves as being trafficked. Most of the time they have an attachment to that trafficker that at some point in time they have shown them some sort of love and attention that they weren't getting somewhere. And that is the coercion piece and the manipulation piece that a lot of people do not necessarily understand. And just because you're an adult doesn't mean that that coercion and manipulation goes away. We all get manipulated and coerced as adults, maybe not into having sex with other people, but in other avenues of our life, we've been manipulated, we've been coerced into doing things. And it's the same thing with victims of sex trafficking.
I can believe it. Alexis, who makes this podcast happen, and I work with women who are in our Dallas County Jail in the Resolana Pod. It's a nonprofit that works with women who are interested in changing their lives while they're in the system. And so many of the women there who have substance use disorders are in that situation because they were ending up with someone who did traffic them, and they ended up getting in trouble for either the possession of drugs or being charged with prostitution, and we're treating them as if they are criminals when all of them are essentially just victims.
Yeah,
in this.
Absolutely. It's, you know, it's the same thing with mental health and substance use. You know, those are the only two diagnoses that are criminalized. And in any other, you know, world, you know, they would be, those diseases would be treated, right? And resource, nobody would, you know, feel bad if they needed to go to treatment, just like if you had cancer and you needed to go get treatment. But because the behaviors of the disease manifest themselves differently, we tend to not be as empathetic to people who are struggling with them. And I've never... And maybe it's because I am in this world, and so I've been able to talk to people of all walks and see people of all walks of life that have struggled with substance use, mental health, homelessness, child sex trafficking, to see that there are so many more layers to any story other than just boiling it down to, oh, it's a choice. It's a choice to use substances. I don't really believe that it's just a choice. I don't think anybody wakes up and says, I'm going to go and overdose on fentanyl today. I don't feel like people wake up and make that conscious decision. I think it's a response to some untreated trauma in their lives associated with adverse childhood experiences.
I love the fact that your organization is dealing with all of this holistically and embracing so many people in the community. If someone is dealing with a certain issue, with whether it's a parent or a young person, whether it's a mental health issue, whether it's substance use disorder, whether there are runaways, the trafficking, And it's an emergency situation, what do you suggest that individual should do?
Yeah, so so the National Suicide Prevention Hotline just launched a couple of months ago. You can always, if it's a suicide ideation or you feel like somebody is in danger of successfully committing suicide, you can always reach out to the hotline. You can also always call 911 if it's an immediate danger and if it's a life-changing emergency. So they may need, you know, hospitalization or whether it be in a medical hospital or in a psychiatric hospital. Now, you know, Dallas PD will go out with a social worker as opposed to that is specifically, you know, trained in dealing with crisis situations such as this.
Sort of their right care team,
yes.
I think it's called.
Yes, I'm glad you said that. Yeah. But if it's a young person, I wish that I could say that I had a better or that we had a better response system in Dallas for young people who are in immediate crisis, because we really don't have something other than just 911. You know, I know back in the day, we used to have an emergency crisis line at Promise House, where people could call 24 hours a day and could get connected with services. But in terms of substance use, there is not really a robust response system in place yet. And what I mean by that is we have some huge gaps in our community response to adolescent substance use. The first one is we do not have a residential treatment program for adolescents who are either insured by Medicaid or they do not have insurance at all. With Texas ranking number one in the country for the number of uninsured children, that is a massive gap, especially when we are at the height of the opioid epidemic. Additionally, we do not have MAT services for adolescents.
Medication-assisted treatment.
Medication-assisted treatment for individuals who are trying to quit using opioids. The withdrawal symptoms for opioids are extremely harsh. And we have those services available for adults, but for adolescents, we don't have them for individuals who are insured by Medicaid or are completely uninsured.
So what do you suggest that we do? For those people who are listening to this podcast, for those of us that are interested, that's outrageous that you don't have those services for young people. What do you suggest we should do? Should we write to our elected officials in Austin, our local officials, look for funding? Tell us what you think would be some suggestions on how we can get involved and to change that.
Right. So one of the things that we've been looking at Youth 180 is whether or not we could take on residential treatment services. And so supporting organizations that are trying to fill the gap. We are one organization, and yes, we are always accepting, donations. But just as important as donations is also this communication, this taking what you hear on this podcast and talking to your community and educating your community that maybe isn't listening to this podcast on what substance use is and what mental health is, so that people will reach out and get the help that they need. Yes, reaching out to your elected officials. Our reimbursement rates for Medicaid services are historically low. I think for Medicaid, for a group session, we get reimbursed $17 for group services. $17 for group services. Our individual therapies that we administer, we utilize EMDR, which is eye movement desensitization and reprocessing. It's been deemed by the World Health Organization as the most effective form of treatment for treating trauma. If you were to get it from a private clinician, you'd probably be paying anywhere between $150 to $250 a session. And we provide that for our clients. So we get reimbursed maybe $70, $74, I think, for an individual counseling session that is utilizing EMDR.
So if someone's listening to this and they say, how do I get involved? How do I contribute? Who should I get in contact with?
Yeah, so you can go to our website, which is www.youth180tx.org, and you can donate directly online there, or you can call our offices, which is 214-942-5166, and you can ask to speak with me, or really anybody on our team can assist with taking donations or helping to get you involved in the work that we're doing. We have lots of volunteer opportunities. One of the things that we do for our families that come for treatment services is we provide them a dinner. We provide them family dinner. And so sometimes we have family serving families, where we'll have a volunteer family come in and they'll bring dinner and they'll serve it to our families that are receiving services for the evening. And that's, that's really impactful because our families get to see that there are people that care about them. And that's so incredibly powerful. But then conversely, the families that are volunteering for us get to see just what it is that we get to do. And, there's so much to be said about being able to connect with other people outside of our bubbles. I tell people all the time that we don't live in vacuums. Just because I live in East Dallas doesn't mean I work and stay and do everything in East Dallas. No, I'm all over the city, and what I've experienced and my life, experiences go with me. And so I might run into somebody who has been homeless, but that's the beauty about the world that we live in.
That podcast, listeners, was Carrie Stitt, president and CEO of Youth 180, an organization that has a 38-year history of providing quality programs to serve the needs of vulnerable youth and their families in our communities. Carrie dropped a load of valuable information on us today about the services and resources 180 provides. She is clearly an experienced and strategic leader with more than 15 years of experience providing services and resources to young people and their families. Her drive, knowledge, and enthusiasm, and her desire to help others is simply infectious, and we are so grateful that she blessed us with her presence as a guest on this episode of The Deep Dive. I hope you've learned a lot today. And remember, if you have questions or concerns, you can always contact Carrie at Youth 180. As always, we here at the Dallas County Public Defender's Office invite you to listen in to our Deep Dive podcast. And if you like what you hear, let us know. You can also call us here at the Dallas County Public Defender's Office if you have questions or you need us to refer you to services at 214-653-3550.